to another episode of Rise and Pod with Adrian Conway. Today, and I know this is a discussion that has gone on within our space for, I don't know, I think a long time. I want to discuss it. I mean, the overall arching theme of today's message and episode is going to be about training and mindset for the CrossFit Games. But it's going to particularly start around the, not necessarily argument, I would say. I don't know that there are any like heavy arguments on which is best, because at this point, we all understand that it depends on what works for you, which is going to be best for you as an individual. But the discussion is framed particularly around what is better. Is it better to train at a camp, a location where you get to train with other competitive athletes, perhaps follow similar, if not the same, programming as them, and hope that the daily push, right, of you competing and or even just being surrounded by other high-level achievers is going to bring a better result out of your own training? Or is it better to have a one-to-one coach, do remote work, remote programming? A lot of times if you're working with someone at a high level that's going to be a coach in the space that has a worthy resume or one that you're going to be willing to like risk the investment on, they're likely not going to be living around you. Not that that's always the case. I mean, there's a beauty in finding coaches that are local and working with people in person that can push you to a high level and take your performance to a high level. Of course, it's just rare. So is it better to do the camp thing? Is it better to do the remote thing? Or is it better to kind of have the hybrid model? I would argue that most people will understand and have the statement and stance that it's probably best to have some type of hybrid model. That's my personal opinion. And here's why. I'll share with you guys my own personal take on this, both from experience and both from what I witness within our community, is that for quite a while, it was very popular to just follow someone's programming because someone special was programming it. And when I say special, I don't mean that they were leading others to the CrossFit Games as a coach, but I mean that they were at the CrossFit Games themselves. Now, this is natural and that's okay. I'm not knocking people who are drawn to following someone's programming because they admire an athlete or what they've achieved. But I am saying that there's an ignorance that is involved when you hold someone's ability to guide you and put that all on in comparison to what they've done as an individual. We can take many other sport examples like Michael Jordan in basketball that would show us good examples of like, well, just because they're great at something doesn't mean they're going to be able to lead other people to be great at something. In fact, because someone is great at something, it often means that they took to it so naturally, whether it was quality of their movement, the way their body is shaped and framed, the mindset that they brought to the table already, that the training and the stimulus and the end result of their career were all based upon advantages that they already had. They didn't have to go through the same progressions. They didn't have to go through the slow process, as many athletes will need to. Now, I'm not saying that that's how it is for everyone or that's how anyone's journey could be summed up, but I'm saying that that's truth. And because of that, that creates a limitation in how they guide other people when other people, more human or limited to greater degrees in skills or capacities, when they have to be led through progressions, because that athlete, high level achiever, might not understand progressions and might not have any in their back pocket. They might not have any established, and not that that's bad. Maybe they can find them. Maybe they're very resourceful. Maybe they can, you know, adapt on the fly and guide you through that. But that is the purest of limitations, in my opinion, when you're following the programming of someone who's a high-level achiever and they don't have high-level success in guiding other people there. With all that considered, this camp model came on really strong, I would say, somewhere at the beginning of 2015-16. And I think people just wanted to hop on the train that had the biggest momentum, the biggest name. And I still think part of it is that within our community. And I mean, you know, even look at the volume of athletes that follow Mayhem programming. Mayhem has amazing programming. They've got amazing coaches and their system has adapted and evolved over time. So I want to give a shout out to those guys because they've pivoted in a very important way, especially as we kind of watch and wonder what Rich's continual involvement will be in our sport as a competitor or as an influence, and where that will remain and how much weight that will carry for people that want to be on Mayhem's programming just because it's Rich Fronings. So as his life and brand continues to shape and evolve, where will that leave that programming, and will people leave it because of that? And this is also the trouble that can create, right? When you're following a brand because of a someone, what happens when that someone pivots or that someone leaves, and what happens to that then business or brand? not to take our conversation down that scope and talk business, but those are a whole nother slew of lessons for people to understand and learn. The limitation with camp programming is that it can be a very well-rounded program. It can get you to a level of fitness, no doubt. But what if you have a weakness of handstand pushups? And the volume that is present in the camp's programming is always at a level where you got to scale it constantly. And there's not inherent progressions built in for people that don't even have handstand pushups, for people that have 3 but need to get 6, and have people that have 6 that need to get 18 strict, and people that have 18 strict but need to be able to do 30 unbroken strict because they want to go to Wodapalooza and qualify for a qualifier when they put 45 and 45 deadlift. Don't make me rant, because I'll rant. And I didn't like that test. I need to do another podcast about the Wodapalooza qualifiers because I wasn't a big fan this year. Don't worry. If you're curious about why, I'll get to it. Tune into another episode. It'll drop shortly before or after this one if you haven't already listened to it. The camp discussion has its limitations, right? And again, all the options are out there. It's a template program based. Heck, I offer one at True Fitness. Go to truefitness.com. Check out what we offer. We have a competitor track, a teen track, a master's track. We have a competitor pro track. The competitor pro track offers less volume than the competitor track so that you can train like a competitor, but with less volume, but there's limitations to it. It will get you really, really fit, but it's not the same as one-to-one programming. Okay. So the next option, right? Camp programming, it offers this really, it feels inclusive. Even if you're working remotely, if you get to train in person with these athletes, there's a lot of advantages because you might be thrown down with some of the fittest people in the world to your left and to your right. But is that a bad thing? Well, Adrian, you might be thinking to yourself, well, Adrian, how could this be a bad thing for me to surround myself with athletes that are training at the highest level? Well, I'm going to tell you, here's the limitation. And I experienced this all the way back in like 2013. I would train someone by the name of Tommy Hackenbrook. You should know who that is if you're a fan of the sport. He finished second at the CrossFit Games in 2009 to Mikko Salo. And he finished sixth in 2014. As an individual, and he has 2 affiliate cups under his belt. Both of those teams I'm also a part of with him, and he's been to the games another couple times on teams as well. So, anyways, successful in our space, football background like me, we competed together, we trained together. I had to monitor how much I could train with Tommy, and the reason this was developmental in my career, early in my competitive career, but I would bang myself up trying to keep up with that dude. Right, he would do things that would push me out of my comfort zone. There were things that he was really great at in the gym, things that I could one-up him at in regards to skills, rarely on any capacity because he was that fit. But when we got together and went head-to-head, we were both willing to die for seconds and points. Right? Like, why would we train together if we weren't really there to push and make each other better? And the same went with our team those years, 2012 and 2013, when we would go back-to-back affiliate cup champs. Like, we didn't train together every day, and we couldn't because we'd run each other ragged. But we had this balance where we could show up, we could do our individualized programming. Shout out to Bobby Maximus, Rob McDonald, at Jim Jones at the time. He's no longer with Jim Jones, but he was their head strength conditioning coach for a while here in Salt Lake City. He was good friends with Tommy, but he programmed for all 6 of us. We all worked on particular weakness focused things throughout the year. And we would come together to train about twice a week at high intensity. We would compete against each other, and we would do, type stuff. To me, this is the optimum balance for almost any athlete. Do your individual-based training. Focus on your weaknesses. You need a one-to-one coach to do that. You need someone to help you progress through what you need to progress through, right? Maybe you need more aerobic development. Maybe you need more gymnastic skill work. Maybe you need more overall contractions to build resiliency. Maybe you need more accessory work to keep yourself healthy. Because when you compound all the stuff that we do for time and for load in regards to Olympic weightlifting, clean and jerk, snatch, deadlift, front squat, thruster, overhead squat, ring muscle up, bar muscle up, ring dip, handstand walking, deficit handstand pushups, right? The list is endless and it goes on forever. But when you do those things at intensity, maybe it costs you more than it costs other athletes. Maybe your frame is different. Maybe you have longer arms and longer femurs like myself. When I squat, the squatting takes a lot different of a stimulus on my body universally than it does the Rich Fronings and the Matt Frazier's and the Drake Lewis and the athletes. I'm just naming names that either people I worked with, compete against, or whatever. But my frame is different than their frame. And so when I squat, it affects me very differently than when they squat or when they thrust or in front squat and overhead squat, and you run the gamut. So I have to have particular resiliency development style training within my own training in order to help me even recover. I got to do more hamstring work and accessory work. I've got to mine the tissues around my knees, both my patella tendon and my quad tendon. I got to think about doing isometrics to help prep and prime those, but also to cool them down for the next day. Again, I'm on this rant, folks, to help you understand and developing a mindset for what, why you might need someone to help you directly and when and if it might be valuable for you to train with a group. All the things that I mentioned in regards to my individual development, I needed that for myself. Those other athletes might not have needed that for themselves. But we can lean into this. We all need four time, four load, and AMRAP style training, right? Because that's our sport. So yes, we still need to play. And if we're going to play, we might as well play together once or twice a week. So this is where I get into this hybrid model where if you got a one-to-one coach and you can find athletes locally around you, even if you don't like them, And I mean that wholeheartedly. Yo, I'm a competitor. I don't often like the people that I compete against because guess what? They're after the same thing. Now, we're friends in a way that like, I respect you, you respect me. I respect your hustle, your effort, your focus, your sacrifice, because you wouldn't make it to the same level that I'm at if you weren't already doing those things. Much respect, much love. But also, at any means necessary, I will take what you want from you because that's why we're playing. All those things considered, I am mature enough, and hopefully I think most competitors in this space are mature enough to be like, hey, let's get together once or twice a week though, so you can try to kick my teeth in and I can try to kick your teeth in this workout, and we get the best out of each other from an intensity standpoint. Hey, we could even write up workouts that aren't on our programs. Cool, let's communicate with our coaches, easy day. Let's do this thing so that maybe, you know, these are a couple of advantages that might go to you. These are a couple of advantages that might go to me. And programming, cool. Again, like it's pretty transparent. If you have relationships, if you're willing to be vulnerable enough like this, I think it can be a home run hitter. And I say that because each week, then you get a chance to strap it on, strap it up, tie the shoelaces up, you know, buckle the chin strap, all these different analogies for like game time style competition and go get it. Then you get to get out of your comfort zone. You get to push your personal capacity and your mindset here, right? Like if I see someone ahead of me and now I'm learning how to follow, but also on the other hand, maybe next week or the next workout, I'm going to lead and I get a chance to flex that leading ability. And I know this is a tenacious competitor who wants nothing more than to beat me. These are all things that can develop someone's skill set, someone's self-awareness, and also their ability to compete at a very high level. So all of that said, this hybrid model is a beautiful balance to me. And then I also want to bring up and highlight, what if you're one-to-one remote and you don't have people to train with? To me, this is where it gets tough. You could be surrounded by the very best. You could be surrounded by the absolute very best coach. Right. And what I mean by that is you could have the most cerebral, most intelligent, most understanding, the best motivator, the best everything writing up a program for you. And that's great. Good for them and good for you. But that doesn't mean that you're experienced enough in competition or personally motivated enough to really be able to, sorry, y'all, I got this ping coming through and it's really annoying the dog dirt out of me. I'm hoping I can minimize it. That doesn't mean that you have the experience or the competitive drive and the mindset to really get the most out of yourself in training every day, because that's a very unique individual. I think there are athletes at the top that do it. I think of Brent Fikowski is literally the cream of the crop here. I think Pat Vellner is up there as well. You know, I'm not sure if these guys train together ever. I'm not sure who they train with ever. And they've been at the top of their game for a long time. I know that Pat has experience training on a team. I know that Brent has put himself in situations where periodically he might travel and train at TTT and go throw down with those guys for a week or 2 weeks. I know that he's probably self-aware enough to put himself in situations to elicit this challenge and or stimulus that he needs to push himself both physically and mentally. But I don't think many up-and-comers in the space would have that ability and self-awareness. So if you're out there on your own and you're far away, think about how important your current location is. And I'm serious about this, that can you up and go somewhere else? Could you come to a place like Salt Lake City where there are a lot of young, hungry athletes that are getting trained by a coach like myself? And I'm not saying you need to train with these athletes every day, but could you have a job out here? that pays your bills the same way that in your current city is. If you're not married and don't have a family, it could be something to consider. If you're not going to university, if you're not doing something that can't be moved, right, and replaced in a different location, it's something that you should strongly consider. And I say that only because, again, I'm that much of a fan of this hybrid type approach where you can follow your own programming and training, and then you can still elicit and practice the ability to chase, the ability to lead, the ability to compete on a regular basis. So that's my personal opinion on what's out there in regards to camps. Is it better to train by yourself? Is it better to train with people? I think that one of the negative effects of training with people as well is that when we train with someone often and we start to take the back seat to them, hey, you know, this is something that I'll bring up here. From a distance, I was watching Dan Bailey when he moved to Cookeville to train with Rich Froning. And Dan Bailey is a phenomenal athlete. Dan Bailey is one of the fittest men in history, in my opinion. When he moved to Cookeville to train with Rich, he never had a chance at beating him, ever. And if he went there knowing that, then I think that was an okay move and a good move, because it probably did get some greatness out of Dan that might not have happened without that move. But if he went there thinking that he would eventually pass Rich or better Rich or anything else that you think, if he thought he really had a chance to be the best in the world while training there, he was completely misled. Because daily, he got to see in workouts, maybe where he could one up Rich, but on a regular basis, he was getting beat by Rich. And when you see that and you experience that, there is subconscious things that happen in your mind. And whether you like it or not, you begin to take the back seat to a superior competitor or the superior athlete, and you justify it. He's got me on that because of this. I've got him on this because of this, right? And it doesn't even matter if Dan was winning the shorter, higher power output workouts, because I guarantee he was. He's a stud at that stuff. If it's sprinty, if it's fast, if it's loaded, even remotely heavy, as long as it's not too technically dependent, because Rich would beat him there. But as long as it didn't get outside of that 6 to 7 minute window, Dan had certainly a chance to beat almost everybody in the world at something simple and fast and hard. I say that, though, to help not just frame that situation, but broaden the scope of your own consideration. If you train with people every day that beat you, every day, you will be able to close the gap on those people. I don't know that you'll ever be able to, in place and in person, surpass them if they're doing the same type of training you are. Now, if you're doing different training, if you're doing different things, if you've got a coach that prescribes to you different things that are going to sharpen your weakness and help them sharpen their weakness, then yes, all tides can rise there. And then you come together a few times a week and you compete and you go head to head and you give it that dog style mentality where you're not going to take the backseat to anybody, regardless of any reason, you might have a chance. Because then when the workouts get released, you've still been doing your private stuff to develop your aerobic base. They've still been doing their private stuff to develop their strength. And the other athlete's been doing their private stuff to hone their weaknesses. But then you get to come together to shine and do your thing and see who's going to end up on top. So again, I think it's great to train with people. I think it's great to have one-to-one remote coaching, but I think it's best to have an opportunity to do both on a regular basis. Follow a program designed for you and have the freedom within that program to 2 times a week to throw down with like-minded competitors. And I'm going to tell you this, I don't even know if they need to be like-minded competitors. You just need to get with a group of people that inspire you and are willing to scale even and kick your butt in some form of a workout, or they're humble enough to scale it to your variation, right? I mean, and scale it so that it's easier for them, so they actually have a chance to beat you, and you practice competition and you practice competing. But I just think that we can't refine that skill enough. And I think it's something that's extremely important and overlooked within our space. So that's my rant there. Now, the next topic that I wanted to discuss on this episode, where we're talking about training mindset for the CrossFit Games specifically, is this particular athlete that comes to my mind. And her name is Bethany Shadburn. I'm going to have her on as I get rolling and start recording again, the More Than Fitness podcast on the CrossFit Games podcast channel. If you guys are listening to this, don't be afraid to go back, spend some time listening to the More Than Fitness podcast with yours truly, Adrian Conway. That exists on the CrossFit Games podcast channel. And what I wanted to do was partner with CrossFit there as an opportunity to create a platform for the athletes to be better known. We know that in order to have success in this world, in this day and age, you've got to both know and be known. And I want these athletes to be known to you so that they can share their story so that you can become fans of them. Or maybe we can create some type of fandom where, yes, there's heroes and there's heels and there's storylines and you get to hear what their lives are like and how they got their sponsorships and how they train and all this stuff. So I will have Bethany on one of those future episodes. We've actually already got it scheduled and I'm hoping to get the interview done before Rogue Invitational this year in 2023. I'm not sure that we'll get it released before that, but hopefully we can sit down together and have a good discussion. But I'm talking about Bethany because she's got a very unique history within our space. Bethany came on strong. I believe she was in the Underdogs camp early with Kotler and that team. And boy, she was fit, right? I think she's been to the games as early as like 2017, 18, 19, perhaps. We know what happened in the 2020 games, but she was rolling. She was building momentum. She was fit. She was fit I think it was the South, Super South, maybe, that she qualified for first in 2017. I was there. I had a team that year. That was the year we won the CrossFit games. But I remember seeing her and be like, okay, you know, she's got some weaknesses. She's got some holes that she was going to need to fill in order to be superior, like elite level in our space, but a perennial games athlete nonetheless. And she was rolling 2017, 18, 19. I think she was continuing to be with the Underdogs crew. And I don't know if she started there. So folks, don't judge me harshly if I'm giving inaccurate information there. But I know that she went there and she was there for a few years, training there with the likes of Danielle Brandon and Carrie Pierce. So in 2020, the COVID games only top five went. Carrie was represented there by Underdog and Kotler assisted her there. She killed it that year. And then, of course, we've got 2021. So 2021 comes out and Shadburn's like trending to be one of the fittest women in the world. And she didn't get to compete that year because of COVID. She got COVID. Her and Carrie Pierce both tested positive for COVID like 2 or 3 days, I think, before they kicked it off, and she had to withdraw, couldn't compete. Heartbreaking, of course. But then it was almost like this downward spiral of her career within the next 2 years where she would struggle to stay healthy. She had a back injury. She was rehabbing. She was still trying to train at a high level. We know how this can happen. I'm a coach. I'm an athlete. I see this from my athletes at different varying levels. Sometimes you get caught in a pocket where there's continual setback and it's very frustrating, but you feel like you're close. You dig yourself out. You go back to training at higher intensity or higher volume. And then you're rudely reminded that you're not quite there yet. And you have another setback. All that said, look forward now to this year, 2023. Shadburn's back at the CrossFit Games. She's publicly talked about what her training looked like over the last year and a half. Bethany had hardly been able to move large loads long distances quickly, folks. She'd hardly been able to do the practical application of what CrossFit methodology is defined as. And yet she was the 15th fittest woman in the world this year at 2023. How's that possible? There's levels to this. Bethany Shadburn established a baseline level of fitness throughout her experience in the first 6 to 7 years of her exposure to CrossFit that allowed her to withstand an injury that didn't even allow her to tie her shoes for a while to her back. Then her training had to adapt in such a way that she was trying to optimize her resiliency, both within her hips and back, her unilateral balance, but her training looked very segmented versus the traditional CrossFit means of performance, right? So we're talking like maybe she's not doing a lot of thrusters. Maybe she's not doing a lot of deadlifts. Maybe she's not doing a lot of power cleans, nothing. It's all slow, positional, tempo work, eccentric loading, isometric contractions. And I don't even know who's doing a programming. But here's what I do know, is that this brings up a very interesting topic on how often do you need to be doing high intensity, high volume, and compound movements when you spent years developing them. Now, I'm not saying that you can ignore them, right? We know that functional movements are compound yet irreducible. And when we break them down into more simple movements, they can't really apply in the same light, in the same way. And maybe that's why Bethany finished 15th and she didn't finish top five. I don't know. But what I do know is that she was 15th fittest in the world. And this brings to the topic, the traditional means of strength conditioning. This is where I originated in the coaching space. I went to Weber State University. I studied human performance. I began to work with like soccer teams, basketball teams, football teams, tennis teams, softball. I don't know if I mentioned that. Almost every major sport there at that university. And then I would do youth strength conditioning and speed development. That was my first ever coaching job. I did that every summer throughout college. I hosted speed and agility camps where we would do load-free stability work, balance and agility work. And the sole goal is these kids were showing up to run faster, jump higher, jump further, and be more balanced when they exited so that they could have successful fall and winter seasons coming out of the summer. Guess what we weren't doing at those camps? If they were football players, we weren't playing football. If they were soccer players, we weren't playing soccer. If they were basketball players, we weren't playing basketball. And yes, I had athletes from each and every one of those sports, major sports, coming to be trained. I even had sessions where there were junior high athletes at my training sessions, 12 to 14 years old. And they were there and in training with athletes, I'm here in Salt Lake City, that were from Utah State, the University of Utah, and Weber State University. Like they would show up to get coached by me to get ready for their season on top of some of the training that they were already doing because they wanted to compete against each other. They wanted to do that. They, you know, it was some of the fastest, some of the most skill position players. I bring this up to help you understand that in order to play a sport at a high level, you don't just always keep playing the sport. You do things that improve your ability to play the sport. That's what Bethany Shadburn was doing this last year. She got 15th at the CrossFit Games. I'd be interested in, and I want to talk to her about when I do interview her, what was the percentile of her training that actually looked like constantly varied functional movements at high intensity? And how does she think that she was able to execute the scope of test that was given to her at the CrossFit Games in 2023 and perform 15th best in the world, knowing that that was absent in her training? It's because you don't always need to do the thing to get better at the thing. And some of you need to be reminded of that. Some of you don't understand the transference of value and execution when you're doing unilateral training at tempos, step-ups, lunges, strict overhead press, overhead walk, farmer carry, single arm farmer carry, right? Front rack walk and carries to support the handstand hold statically. Right? Like all these things have a unique ability to help enhance everything else that you're doing. Very hard to be mindful of that and recognize that at the time because we become very insecure when we're not touching high intensities and doing it in the way that we know makes us uncomfortable. And I'm saying that from athlete as experience. I chased that stimulus headlong too often though. And I think it deterred my performance. And I'm not saying if Bethany Shadburn looks back on this year, she's going to say, yeah, my training was excellent. I'm going to go into next year training that way. I don't think that's true. But I think you have to understand that once you develop a broad base of athletic capacity specifically demanded in the sport of CrossFit, right? Which means, yeah, you've got some thrusters and you've got the capacity to do high level loaded thrusters and high volume lighter thrusters. I got the same with clean and jerk and snatch. Like you got solid lifts. I'm not saying you're the strongest in the field, but they're solid. And you've got the basic level of gymnastics and you understand psychologically intensity and how to chase it. When you reach that level, you don't always need to do the thing to improve the thing. And I want that to be one of the resonating quotes that you take from this podcast episode is that I think we're starting to step back and have a greater, broader understanding in how to help an athlete with their durability, how to train and progress training throughout the cycle of a year, and how to optimize intensity and volume and longevity within our space. Athletes are burning out because they chase intensity too often. Athletes are burning out because they chase volume too much and not at the right time. And athletes are unwilling to be confident in their coach's perspective or their own perspective of their programming and the stimulus that it creates, right? We feel like we should always feel tired when we're doing CrossFit. You shouldn't. We feel like we should always feel slightly sore when we're doing CrossFit. You shouldn't. Because I'm going to tell you right now that as a competitive sport athlete, if I'm playing college football and I'm playing on Saturdays, my coach is not actually trying to help me feel like I played a game on Thursday before we play on Saturday. My coach wants me to feel like the last time I played was last Saturday. Now we want to get reps in. We want to get quality reps in of preparation for the team that's coming. We want to get quality reps in at speed of the style of competition that's going to happen. We want to get repetitions and preparation in for the situations that will present themselves. But we're not playing games until Saturday comes again. You go even into preseason. Yes, we do scrimmages, but they're few and far between. And also rarely is it 1v1s, meaning the best on offense versus the best on defense. We have to learn how to adapt this overall mindset and perspective with CrossFit. After you get a certain amount of reps under your belt and competitions under your belt, you need to be doing film study and film review of your training every day. If there's thrusters in your workout and you're not watching how you thruster, the depth at which you hit and the way that you lock it out, that's you don't really care that much. If you're doing chest to bar pull-ups, butterfly pull-ups, both kipping, regular kipping or butterfly, or you're trying to master the strict ring muscle up and you trying it, but you don't film it and you don't watch it, you don't really care that much. Or you're not really giving that much thought on how you can actually improve by simply watching and not always doing and failing, or not always doing and succeeding, but watching and learning and remembering and visualizing and thinking about that next drill and sending the video to your coach so they can develop the next drill and the next step of the progression. So instead of that one, you can get that two. And instead of holding on for that false grip for, you know, 5 chest to ring pull-ups, now you can hold on to a false grip for 7 chest to ring pull-ups. And it was a simple tweak of keeping your feet in front of the rings and not that break in the midline that you constantly have. Now, I can go down this rabbit hole and we could talk for hours about this, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to save you some time. There's an evolution taking place within our space where we're starting to understand that programming does matter, yes. But it also ain't just a science. It's not. You can't just do the math and do the percentage math and do the thing. Sorry, not for this sport. It's not how it works. It's a science and an art. And it takes both experience and time and understanding and study in order to be successful to program it and coach it at a very high level. Not only that, but I think you have to have a very unique ability to communicate and inspire. So if you're a coach in this space and you feel like, man, you're just dry and you got no personality, like good luck taking someone to the CrossFit Games. Good luck getting someone to listen to your words and be inspired, even when they don't want to do the thing, to do the thing. Or to be inspired enough by you to take your direction that when they want to do the thing, there's enough conviction in your voice that tells them, don't do it. You don't need to do it. You're ready. Let's go. Today's a rest day. You're going to kill it tomorrow. Because those are the hardest conversations I have with my clients. Some people want to train their face off. Some people want to compete their face off. And I got to be like, hey, nope, not today. Not today. And no, you can't do 4 sets. I told you it's 2. And if you want them to be productive, you better do those 2 the right way. Then read the intent, execute it to your best of your ability. Leave no stone unturned. Go hard, but you only get 2. We don't need extra fluff. So, folks, when I talk about training and mindset, when we talk about training and coaching, to me, I'm trying to take every lesson that I've ever learned in any sport that I've ever played. Take every lesson that I've ever learned from any astute, psychologically advanced person than I've ever acknowledged. I don't want to call them smarter than me because I think that I have a growth mindset. So I think that I can learn almost anything that's teachable and digestible for me. It might take me longer than other people, but there are folks that certainly learn things quicker. But I'm taking every lesson that I learned from those people, taking every lesson that I learned from someone who's more charismatic and has a stronger presence and attitude than I do. And I'm taking all those lessons. And that's how I try to make this winning opportunity and progressive opportunity for each and every one of my clients. So if you're coaching out there, you need to be doing the same. If we want to continue to level up the sport, if you're an athlete out there, that's what you need to be looking for. If you want to level up your ability to perform, you have to think about, man, am I being led in this way? do every day I do something for time without rest? Is every day I don't do stuff for quality? Is every day progressions, or is it all just full movements all the time? Where is this unilateral work that Adrian was talking about, this one leg and one arm, and why is that important? And if you're not having those conversations on the team that you're a part of, on the coaching staff that you're paying, or with the one-to-one coach that you have, or even folks, if you're the everyday athlete and you go to an affiliate and you don't do unilateral training that's not for time, and I'm talking tempos, I'm talking isometrics, I'm talking stuff that helps the resiliency of your body so that you can stand the test of time with all this high intensity training that we do, good luck. You probably won't last long. You'll probably get burnt out. You'll probably be scaling workouts a lot because you're going to be hurt and it's going to get annoying. Can't do that. Can't do that. Won't last. And then your gym, and if you're an affiliate owner, listen to this, you know what your gym is going to be doing. Looking for clients. You're going to be trying to promote, get more people to sign up, lowering your price, afraid to raise your price because it's going to put you in a rough spot. Listen, I appreciate you guys tuning in. Overarching theme is this. Hey, if you're an athlete and you have the opportunity to have a one-to-one coach, if you can afford that, do it. If not only that, then you could get an opportunity to go train with other like-minded and desired athletes that are even a little better than you. Go train with them 2 times, 3 times a month, once a week, whatever it works out. Chase that intensity on those days. Compete. Don't take the backseat to anybody. If you're a camp athlete, which means that you follow template training, if you're just paying a monthly subscription, you got to think about finding ways to train your own weakness though and add it in. If you don't know it good enough, you got to really think about what you can do in your life to allocate funds to invest in a one-to-one coach. It's going to be worth it for you. And then lastly, if you're a one-to-one athlete and you have a great coach and you're remote and you never, ever get to train with anyone else, I want to encourage you to think about what your goals really are in the space. And if that matches what you are and you can still show up to local competition or you can show up to the open and you just want to simply get better at that, that's great. But if you could relocate, if you could take classes remotely, if you can get your job transferred to another city, you might want to look into it. Because if you can still make money and live in an area that puts you in a place where you can have success early versus late, right now instead of 2 years from now, that's going to mean a lot when it comes to training age and your opportunities to build capacity in the space. So nonetheless, folks, I love getting on here and ranting and talking about current issues in our space, current topics within our space. This one was about training and mindset and the sport of CrossFit, but I'm sure it could be applied to many different endeavors in life. I use Bethany Shadburn. Shout out to Bethany. If you listen to this episode, certainly admire what you've been able to accomplish. Can't wait to sit down and dive into what the last couple of years have looked like for you. And then of course, your ability to grace the CrossFit game floor and finish 15th in the world amongst all that adversity. But I thought that she was just a really great example on how it's not cookie cutter, folks. We're deep enough in this sport to understand that you gotta take the journey that works for you and it's not going to work for everyone else. But with that being said, hey, remind that in your own life. Remember that in your own life, right? What I do isn't going to work for you and what you do isn't going to work for me, and that's okay. And I think that if we can remember that, we'll all keep rising, and that's the goal. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. Tune in to the next one. I have no idea what it'll be about, but it might just be a short format episode to give you a good kick in the derriere and get you through the rest of your week. But keep rising.